interrupting the current neo-Euphronian, climate-challenged, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism. To bring you behind the woodshed, this is Cricketube Busting Episode BTWRLM 591. And remember, being free is not a spectator sport, so get you behind the woodshed. And you don't know what you missed until you do get behind the woodshed. It is pretty much all that simple. So I keep telling people, you got to bring cause. We just don't talk in ideas. You can talk in hypotheticals, but they got to go somewhere. And the best way to learn is to find a problem that you need to solve and start to solve it. And you finally roll up your sleeves and you do some more than just conjecture and just typing and complaining on something that you have either a desire or a need to respond to. And that was an issue that I talked about for people back east. Another story was popping up. I hope that what I reported on a while back, you have filed your claim if you were there, because it had to be filed by August 10th, but I want to bring it up to date. Again, the procedures and the process, and don't wait around. Toxic water claims at U.S. base topped 500,000. So we're talking about the government looking forward and caring about you. Well, not so much. They try to look after the fact, but we're going to find out, not so easy either. The deadly contamination at Camp Lejeune could be the biggest case in history. More than 500,000 people have sought compensation from the U.S. military for damages caused by contaminated water at Marine Corps Base Camp Lejeune, Reuters has revealed. Dangerous chemicals were first discovered in the water supply in the North Carolina facility in 1982. According to the U.S. government, the contaminated water may have affected an estimated 1 million people with conditions such as kidney cancer, bladder cancer, and leukemia between 1953 and 1987. Administrative claims had to be filed by August 10th deadline to make the plaintiffs eligible to receive compensation. The deadline was set by the Camp Lejeune Justice Act, signed into law exactly 2 years prior. So hopefully you sent the word out. Those of you that were involved, you made your claim, and you'll have to go through that process. Again, you hear all the little details I talk about all the time and how to learn about them so that when it comes to you, you're not standing there not knowing what's really going on, and you don't have to wait around for somebody that may or may not be able to help you. As I tend to find, that legal profession's not really there to help you. I don't care whether they're the judges, I don't care whether they're the establishment of all the rules, and I don't care if they're the so-called attorneys, the attorneys they turn out to be, just like we heard back in the King's Day. They're not there really to know. And I'm a little bit shocked at that at this point, even this late today. You can know more. What the problem is the courts won't be very receptive because they're literally protecting that elitism in the system, the guild. Doesn't want to bring shame upon the brotherhood. So it'll do lots of things to cover it all up. It'll pretend to be doing law. And this is where people just start throwing their hands up. And I say that because we do that, we give it over to them. They're an occupier in our land. And we know that because of the policies. And I won't go too deep on that. This issue tells us that the military essentially poisoned their own water, let the soldiers go through, maybe to 1 million, maybe more, who knows. At some point, they're not keeping track, right? They really don't want to. But this was one of those things I reported on, asked you to look into it, find people. If you know them, let them know, and they can make their claim. So this is how this works. There's a law that says there's a date. You respond, you make your claim, and you get in the process. We'll find as we go through, there's requirements. Just because you've put some stuff on the paper isn't enough. And I've explained this over the decades and a half or so, or longer, depending on if it's not just RLM radio. But here, this one is, I tell people on and over, roll your sleeves up, and this is how you go do that. To roll your sleeves up and start to do something for yourself. And if you don't have the opportunity to continue to protect yourself in a system that doesn't appear to really want to do that. And part of that answer seems to be embarrassment. When you can get enough on them, and you don't walk in like you know so much, you just go in with the black and white and what your facts are. And that's really, can be just enough. Right now, there's only a few people that do that. And so it's easy to kind of bat you away. Well, we get tens of thousands of people going in everywhere, invading these places. And it's not just the courts. It's just wherever there's going to be a problem with the government not doing what it can. Like I thought the great Kobe swindle was going to be for us all. And we failed ourselves, and we didn't do that. That was an administrative thing right there. Then you could turn it real quickly into a hybrid judicial, which is really the jurisdictional common law equity in the habeas corpus, and I'll touch that again today, because we're kind of touching a little bit about these viruses and things that say coming back on us. I want to just get us refreshed, but with a lot of other things. So I want to touch back again what I finished off last week and last episode, leaving my listener here with the report that Trump will have bulletproof glass, a shield around him on the podiums at outdoor rallies. We see that as soon as he got behind one, it didn't last long, but when a woman fainted and Trump had to stop his thumping and stepped out and around the glass to go into the crowd to help provide aid and comfort to an elderly woman. And so that's pretty interesting and neat. And that seems to be genuine in him at some point, so I don't have much to say, but that's the report I left for this last week. I was going to go on, ran out of time, to continue that situation. Why is that glass? What we see here from the FBI is where evidence goes to die department. Despite or because of ongoing investigations, we can read, the body of the 20-year-old who tried to assassinate former President Donald Trump was gone when Representative Clay Higgins tried to inspect it as part of an investigation into the shooting, the congressman revealed in a preliminary investigation report. In the report, Higgins wrote that he had attempted to examine Crooks' body, but was unable to do so, and alleged the FBI was obstructing further investigative efforts. Quote, my effort to examine Crooks' body on Monday, August 5th, caused quite a stir and revealed a disturbing fact. The FBI released the body from cremation for cremation 10 days after J-13, Higgins wrote in the report. Quote, on J-23, Crooks was gone. Nobody knew this until Monday, August 5th, including the county coroner, law enforcement, and sheriff, etc. So if you thought your local sheriff was the law and the end and beginning, well, the FBI don't care. And this is also part of the problem. Some of these jurisdictions are really part and parcel to the federal government and don't stand up. And I can say by experience, when they do start standing up, the heat starts coming against them. And I don't know what that is, but the people don't even support it. It's really fascinating. Sheriffs that come up and say, we're going to make sure the law is being upheld, don't seem to be lasting in office very long after that, which I find really fascinating. And then, maybe not so fascinating, when you look and see what they do at the federal level and how they contaminate and corrupt the election process. Remember what happened that day, or the day after, sanitizing the roof about this. It sounds like this is the FBI sanitation team was already at work in morgue as well during its investigation, preserving information from being scrutinized, as the Judicial Watch FOIA request will show you when they use the same excuse. Higgins said that the Butler County coroner, quote, technically had legal authority over the body, but I spoke with the coroner and he would have never released Crooks' body to the family for cremation or burial without specific permission from the FBI. He also wrote that, quote, similar to releasing the crime scene and scrubbing crime scene biological evidence, this action by the FBI can only be described as, by any reasonable man, as an obstruction to any following investigative effort. So while it was recently reported by a congressional task force also that Crooks did not act alone, and we got that much behind the woodshed with Occam, I would have to ask, and? This is, we lose the body, we are now coming up with a congressional report that confirms there was more shooters, and that's it. We're not going any further. There's no action taken. They're not looking into the FBI for their scrubbing, sanitizing the crime scene. This goes back on and on as we start to now look at this and find it. 9/11 was the same thing. Giuliani cleaned up all of 9/11 faster than anybody could get a handle on what might have been happening. How did they stay so capable? Has always been a question to me. And all these things that they do are under this color of authority. Because under color of an investigation, a lot of official crime can hide, we'll read, the Judicial Watch FBI refuses to release Trump assassination records. Again, from the department, evidence dies with the FBI here. Ongoing. I don't know how these, as we've been watching these last few years, how this continues. But this is one of the failures of the Republic, if you will, and how this really works. But also, we're not seeing the intelligence, I think, in society. It's clearly, we used to have a better comprehension as a people as we've moved back in time. College level, they didn't even have college level stuff, and people were reading and acknowledging things in college level. We don't do that anymore. They're speaking to us in less than 10th grade level now. I've been really shocked. So that's part of our problem. But they're able to get away with this. We don't have people that are in office that understand how to wield the levers of justice, whether or not you're in the judiciary. Remember, there was a tripartite government that was supposed to have check and balance power. It's seeping out a little bit, but it's not really actually implemented that way. But Judicial Watch announced today that the Federal Bureau of Investigation withheld information on Freedom of Information Act FOIA requests for information about its coordination with the U.S. Secret Service regarding the July 13th Butler, Pennsylvania rally at which former President Trump was shot. In denying Judicial Watch's FOIA request, the FBI cites FOIA Exemption 7A, which applies to information that could reasonably be expected to interfere with an enforcement proceedings. The purported perp Patsy Crooks is dead. The Secret Service agents and local police are immune. What could reasonably be expected to interfere with enforcement proceedings? Enforcement of what? And against whom? Unless they know. It wasn't just Crooks. So this would sound like a valid challenge to the objection to the reason to withhold that information to follow up with the court or to force the clarification from the FBI. I've talked about how you respond to these FOIAs. And remember, at the state level, it's not a FOIA. The state is an open records request, typically. But the FOIA Act is what we go through federal. We would go through the rules there, and they had their 7A exception. I was thinking more that people, they would come in and they would say that the 7A, and they would set up this thing, like we just found out, the FBI is sanitizing things. It's not really looking to preserve evidence. It's actually cleaning the place of it. And so that would be needs to be brought out in the FOIA. That could be highlighted through that. But how about what's your thoughts regarding this plausible but incomplete FOIA obstruction to production of the request of info? Learning to contemplate these sorts of questions is an important skill to build with this as we go through this, as a way I talk about them. If you consider these things, you're going to be better prepared not to see an observation and have a complaint about it or just roll your eyes and shrug your shoulders. You start looking at what they're doing. A fraud is not something that is a reason. So they're not supposed to be sanitizing scenes. So if they start denying that there's an ongoing investigation and they're actually sanitizing a scene and these denials are actually delays to stop them, that might be a different type of notice to the court to put together. So I guess I'm saying this again, as I just mentioned, prepare yourself and you're going to be more, you have a better ability to start bringing in more creative ways to get around this. And I've done this a couple times with FOIAs that I've sent in and they've sent back, there was no information. Simply, like with the Forest Service, they said there was no information. And I said, surely there was my letter that was part of that file. And then there would have been this and there would have been that. And so I don't believe that you're telling me the truth. Well, eventually, within a few weeks, I got a packet of information, which looked fairly complete at that point. So if you don't do that follow-up, they do this initial hold-up on the FOIAs. If you don't follow through, they win. And if you do follow through, then you just put yourself down into the next potential to get that information. And consistent with the plan conceived behind which head by Occam's razor relative to the Trump assassination attempt to convince Trump to go into war with Iran, and remembering Snowjob Stone's expose to us that the U.S. has technology to create the signatures, the digital signatures, to make an attacker look like anyone, hiding itself from being the actual culprit. We can find a story here. U.S. intelligence officials say Iran to blame for hack of Trump campaign. Now, this is a second push for this. As well, I was explaining this before when it led into the assassination. This is coming after. They're going to try and do their secondary proof by making another claim for it. But I wanted us to remember the digital connections to this can be altered anymore. There's technology to do it. We won't know, actually, who's doing the problem. So they can blame anybody, essentially. And I told you way, way back when Snowjob Stone put that out, or let us know about it, that we're letting us know. So we would know to pay attention to them. And I'm going to use it today. Right now, I'm doing it right now. We don't know what the government is doing. There's no evidence, actually, that they could do it, but they could pin it on anybody anyway. They can show, they're not even doing that, about bringing evidence. They could do that, but they're not even doing that. But if they did, we still couldn't see that evidence would be pure. It's not true. The joint statement from the FBI and the other federal agencies was the first formal attribution of the hack to a foreign entity. Now, if we have the FBI doing cleanups, we certainly can see that they'd be doing all kinds of information to do. If you can destroy evidence, you can create it. And the culprit is involved, again, the FBI. This is really going to become a disgrace relative to this organization if we had any inkling that they were truth, justice, in the American way. The U.S. intelligence community has said that Iran is to blame for the hack of Donald Trump's presidential campaign. The joint statement from the FBI and the other federal agencies was the first formal attribution of the hack to a foreign entity. The Trump campaign had previously said Iran was responsible. I looked at that. How do they know? Why is this story so clear? So who's playing this other side on inside of Trump? And I said why they would be doing that and not even telling Trump. Again, there's players around it where the swamp is up around Trump's ears. He never cleared it out. However, it says in a series of reports, the U.S. media citing, quote, anonymous intelligence sources claiming that Iran was plotting to assassinate Donald Trump to hack his presidential campaign were not accompanied with any evidence. As I said earlier, there has been no evidence of this. Evidence, the FBI is where evidence goes to die. So, or to be fabricated, it looks like here. And the intelligence agencies, they don't say the CIA, certainly. The CIA would be in here to foment and color, you know, they do color revolution. They've been pining for a war with Iran for quite a long time. So we heard that quite a long while back, years and years ago. And hear that Iran calmly rejected the U.S.'s unsubstantiated and evidence-free claims. So they're not dummies. They know what to do. They're pointing it out. Not many people observe that. And they may just blame them for just being deniers. But when you look at the totality of what's going on, I'm not so sure that Iran is to blame on any of this at this point. And my scrutiny goes back to who? The one who alleges, in this case, without any evidence. So we can better blindly trust the FBI where evidence goes to die, fomenters of color revolution, intelligence community to tell the truth, right? That's what we want to do. That's what we're going to hang our hat on. It's being reported the FBI is confident Iran done it. That's it. But that shows us the FBI is a confidence man. Con, heavy on the con here. If the agency were more than a confidence man, it would provide irrefutable evidence. But it can't, and it doesn't, because the FBI is where evidence goes to die. The people should not even allow this. This is a waste of time and money. It's an appropriation of funds that is improper. And people should be, especially the representatives, they should be all over this. More than doing an investigation, when they saw inconsistencies, they should have started to cause prosecutions. You know, in particular here, where it wants to make stuff up, this FBI, the government, without a judicial check and balance. And we're going to move this, watch how this FBI has been working in lots of areas in the world, in our society, but through different facets. That the FBI says the raid at U.S. home of journalist Dmitry Symes was court authorized, but gives no details. So, can we stop right there and say the court rubber stamped authorized in the court's war on journalism here, can't we? The same problem. No evidence. We just assert, we allege, and there's no court to check and balance this like we were told was supposed to happen. According to Symes, there were, quote, no available items or information of interest, close quote, in the family home. Dmitry Symes Jr., son of Dmitry Symes, told Sputnik that he does not know the purpose of the FBI's investigation, but suspected it can be an intimidation tactic. Earlier, Symes, Channel One presenter, founder, and ex-president of Center for the National Interest, USA, told Sputnik that he had not been to the United States since 2022. So let's hold on right here again. Given the man is presumed innocent, and given innocent men wouldn't need to lie about such a thing, his statement that there are no available items or information of interest are in the family home is the truth. And the warrant also has to have information of timely. How is two-year-old information timely when he hasn't been there? Starts to show this has all been made up as we just begin into this. So what did the court use as a probable cause to believe that there was anything at the home that the court would authorize for the warrant for? Is why it appears that there's a rubber stamping going on by the court, and the judge appears to be derelict in his duty to be independent of the executive branch and check the excesses to ensure justice as the republic we believe exist or should exist, demands. So surely here the FBI would tout this as a big deal to show Conflant how much it is protecting the people from crime as well. And we haven't heard any of that. It went silent on this one as well. And so why then is it tight-lipped for this, in this case? But it appears it's a war of terror against we the people. The U.S. is allowed by a fallen judiciary trustee to breach the Constitution. The war of terror is also a war on journalism. Again, as they cut the lines and try to interfere with the lines of communication. And being the U.S. government, operatives are making open war on we the people, in particular those advocating peace or continuing negotiations, as these, if you look very carefully, these journalists are trying to do. Or they're trying to keep the secondary channels open, where Mr. Symes does, behind the scenes, when there are none at all in the governments, is telling on what the West is doing. You hear what Russia is wanting to keep lines open. We know, I've told you before, that anybody who looks at this, diplomacy, talking, negotiating, seems like a nothing. There's very important information that gets transferred even while you're at the table doing nothing and can keep a lid on a lot of things. The United States is not interested in that. And then it turns, as I said, the war against the United States wages out there is actually the one they're waging here. And we're watching it through the very first thing they start attacking in earnest, again, the journalism, our lines of communication. And as I've said over and over, I know it's paraphrased, you knows them when you sees them. This is the Libra Code. This is a law of war. This is international law now, adopted into international law back in the 1900s. So, no opinion here. This is all has the basis. You see the Libra Code, I post the link to go read it at the bottom of the broadcast, or just sits there for you to read. It's part of why I put it there, for this kind of thing. That's what we've been under. So they are attacking the government here. These folks in the government are attacking, most importantly, freedom of the press and free speech and of association in an attempt to destroy those lines of communication. So they're going right after the first parts of the Constitution, which sounds trite. A lot of people want to make it sound trite. These folks that are in the government were never supposed to even approach that. And they're just stomping all over it. And that there isn't a check and balance in this country. It has to tell you, you don't live in that republic that we were supposed to keep. And I say then, we have a lot to learn before we start thinking we know what's going to go on, and we better turn our attention to it very quickly. It's moving pretty quick against us. So the government is destroying our necessity of being an informed people to keep that republic. If the man is not telling the truth, then in due course, we'd all found out. In other words, those warrants would have been much more proper. They would have been more timely. They would have had a charge. They would have come right out and done it. They're trying to make it sound like they got something bigger, but they're actually attacking journalists singularly. In fact, I saw someone else who I would consider a journalist, and he got stopped when he came into the country from out of the country. He lives out of the country, came back in the country. They stopped him and put him away. You never heard about that. I just realized he was talking about, he just put that together. He's part of this too. Absolutely. They're going after anybody that has a contrary thought to whatever the government wants to see in the future. So, the man is telling the truth. We'd find it all out. They would have had all their ducks in a row. They would have had a reason. It would have all been said and done. And probable cause doesn't require proof, so that we wouldn't have to see that much. But we would see more than silence. And so once it's openly executed, why the tight-lippedness again? Unless there is nothing there, actually. And it is pure harassment, intimidation, or worse, as these folks are experiencing. And I'll provide a link to Mr. Symes' discussion. The U.S. is quite an anomalous thing involving what seems to be any account of theft, open theft of his private property as well when you look at it, within the house and his bank accounts. Understand how insidious this becomes and where they can go after you. And they did it on nothing they're telling him. I've seen reports after this. He doesn't know. They haven't talked to him. They're not telling him. So they go after his bank accounts so he can't pay his bills or his mortgage. He has problems with that. Now he's got... Apparently he's doing well enough. He's got it all worked out. Got things worked out alternative. So he's in that way where he can still kind of get along. He's being hobbled pretty hard. He can't pay his bills through the routine methods. It's also, if you look, this is what they want to get us into the digital. They just turn you off. We're watching that happening out in the open. They also came in and they blocked his Social Security bank account. They confiscated it and then they released it. So they did wrong right up front. They're not supposed to do any of this at all. They don't care not to touch. They touch, they grab it, it's theirs, they think. And there really hasn't been this check and balance, which should have been going on for decades and decades and decades, so that it never got here. But get the link and read more. Presuming he's telling the truth, these acts by any government. But worse, by the government that was supposed to be the beacon of freedom, the U.S. government, has dire consequences that none of us should be okay with when I see these stories. Because this is one more example of the government making up a crime, even though you would have done nothing here wrong, nothing at all. And it looks like, again, with the presumption of innocence, it's even worse on top of that. Given these men and journalism, and women, mostly it's men so far that I've seen them going about after, I've noticed in Europe they have gone after a few women in journalism, that they really don't have much of a say. They keep you, they detain you, they make you miss flights. It literally is a harassment, certainly an intimidation. And I've talked to you about how you create that intimidation and that harassment into extortion and coercion. So you'd have to look to do that. At least get it in your mind. This journalism could start to point that out as well to help people. Like I've been trying to do with the great Comey swindle. Here, go look here. Go read here. This is what they're supposed to do. When they don't do that, you have a way to protect yourself. And I said, learn that because it's coming around. It's not just the Comey swindle. It's going to be about anything that they decide like this. And they want to encumber your life in an unpleasant way, which the official perpetrators of the crime under color of a lawful warrant, but without the substance required for a lawful warrant, will get away with it to do it again to someone else or many else's. As we've just seen with the thing that they did that they're doing to Scott Ritter, Julian Assange, and a host of these other journalists that are out there. Again, you don't have to like them. You just have to listen to them, and then you qualify what they're saying. And they're witnesses of whatever they have, whether that's, everything needs to be qualified anyway. So, given I'm going to presume innocence on people, and I think it's the right way to go, then we are looking at a government that isn't to be presumed innocent, and we know the culprit already. We know some when we see them. It's pretty easy, pretty fast. Now the thing is, what do we do? Like I said, okay, crooks, the body's gone. They're not gonna, they sanitize the place. And now they think that there's more shooters. And? What's next? And? What else? Because we already got that. We got that behind the woodshed. The weekend after, right? That wasn't hard. It is a lot tougher to go after the criminals. But you notice that their journalism is a crime at this point. And it's a crime because I believe, and I think I've supported it, that there's a war of terror and it's a war against our own people. And the few that we see here that are being attacked openly is not to diminish the sacrifice of the reported over 160 murdered or wounded journalists since the lawful Palestinian resistance against the unlawful belligerent occupier of the Zionist regime in Palestine, which the United States government funds as well. So don't forget about all those fallen. They didn't even get due process. And all of those are challenging the mainstream United States political propaganda. So again, there's a motive. And if you think that the government's here to help you, if anybody in the government's going to be helping you, I think you have a wrong view. The evidence is all around us, but it's not. It's not without support to consider we the people are under the attack by this U.S. occupier at home, as I've been saying, that carnival mirror we look at over there. It's actually happening to us here. They're making it more obvious. It's under the pretense of whatever the government itself makes up. And the judiciary is not there to stop it. Nor are your purported uniparty representatives, as we can see, or those of the states as well, the senators, supposed to protect the interest of the state. So again, you're watching this conspiracy to work in concert to allow it, aiding and abetting. And this, we watched it turning inward. The civil war isn't between MAGA or Antifa or whomever, irrespective of any political leanings, but has been being waged with any who are themselves also complicit against we the people. When you stop seeing the check and balances, that should have been a big clue for people. And as more voices of truth and reason are taken out, whom can identify the organized criminals against us here? If we look right in the news, right, tell us, because it isn't counter to their political persuasion, we start to have to take acknowledgement that this is a very dire moment in time. There's just no way else to put this. Again, we can look at all the entertainment, and I'm not saying war is entertainment. I'm saying that is used to keep our attention elsewhere. And at home, they're destroying us ever so slowly. And like I said, looking around, watching education do its job, do what it was made for, is really sad, and it's a scary thing. And we're watching how it develops and what it's going on. To the day, we were looking at people that are only interested in what their hair color is or what other thing that they can believe that they're, that what they call virtue signaling, how they think they can be helping someone by their voice. They have no clue what's going on. They have no idea. They're all confused. And this is part of an abuse, of societal abuse as well. Keeping on the theme, the FBI cracking down on U.S. citizens linked to Russia media, the agency is targeting people who could allegedly influence the U.S. presidential election in Moscow's favor, sources have said. And again, remember, they just make this stuff up. And also, if you think back just shortly, you'll notice that there was really nothing in the Russian collusion of the last election that panned out at all. It was all made up, everything. This is why I don't know what more to do. I just shake my head. I see what's going on and don't know why people just haven't stopped and said, no, we're not letting this happen anymore. We're not going to embrace this. We're not going to cheerlead for it. But earlier this month, the U.S. Security Agency raided the homes of Scott Ritter, a former U.N. weapons inspector, RT contributor, and Dmitry K. Symes, a Soviet-born U.S. political pundit who hosts a show on the domestic Russian television. Remember, he said he has a social security number from the United States. Now, there's a whole story about the whole social security number I won't get off. Just understand, he's connected with the United States, but he works over there in Russia. And both of the men who have said that they work independent as like an independent contractor, that no one dictates to them. The people that are dictating them is the United States government and the FBI. So start figuring that out, if you will, because it's important to understand the depth of the depravity that government officials will go through. And I think it's local too, and it's certainly in the local judges. There's just no place. I haven't seen where there's really any place. But this doesn't eventually come up. And to see it, to understand it, is one thing. Then to internalize it and to be able to understand how to work around it is, I think, going to be imperative. All this stuff. Like we're seeing this new disease coming back through. I'm saying, I told you before, they're going to keep hitting us and hitting us with different variations of things until they start scaring everybody. And it's not just about saying, I don't believe you. Because there is, like we're going to, I'll get to it in a moment, here in a few more tabs, there's something out there that's viable. It's natural. It's not novel. There is a novel. It's covering a novel. But that you have to be able to start parsing this and then be ready to defend yourself and do it in the black and white, as I've explained. These attacks, that come at us from the FBI are very formidable, and they're absolutely intimidating. And if they take out all that your wherewithal, your money and things in your bank accounts, now you've got a whole lot of fronts to deal with while they're taking advantage. So don't underestimate the type of pressure that can come. Maybe most people don't have this, but again, I told you, just a little bit of work will get their attention. Doesn't take much. The chairman of the Jefferson Mining District was confronted. So, because of some positions that we took as a district, and I was in conversation with him just before he was talking with the FBI, and we found out they don't know anything. They don't know the law. They don't know how it works. They just sit there to ask you questions, get information, try to round up, make up stories. And that conversation really didn't last too long, I understand. And they went away and never came back. But they did a dirty job. Next thing the chairman knows, he's on a no-fly list. So this is how the government works. They intimidate. They had nothing. They haven't done anything for years and years because there was nothing there. And they found they were in violation of the law. The FBI is in violation of the law. Who'd have thunk it? So these experiences inform us that this is not an organization at all that we should be having around us at all. And all these other people as well. Until we can see the checks and balances back at work, this whole place almost needs to just shut down and then we started up a little bit at a time. But anyway, back to this. The raids are part of a broad criminal investigation. Remember that investigation is where evidence goes to die or be fabricated. Again, Symes had, they have nothing on him that he knows about. And he hasn't even been around for a couple of years that it could be anything. So that's part of where this is, the investigation becomes, what can we go find? The fishing exhibition that goes on to put things together. Try to catch, make a big fish out of a nothing. I'm not even, you don't even have bait on the hook. You're going to make it up. The broad criminal investigation that is part of an aggressive effort to combat the Kremlin's influence operations. The NYT reporter on Wednesday, citing anonymous U.S. officials, had said the federal government plans more raids and may issue criminal charges, the sources said. So there's your warning. That's the message they're trying to send out to journalists. And when they can make it up, when they can come and rifle through your belongings and your house and your records and your bank accounts without actual reason, with a rubber stamp court, you'd better be concerned. U.S. law enforcement officials described the targets as, quote, individuals intentionally spreading disinformation from Moscow, the report said. The newspaper noted that the investigation could, quote, bump up against the First Amendment protections of rights to free speech. Remember, freedom of speech is freedom. Free speech is different. And that's an interesting distinction to understand. You're free to speak. You're not a free when you have a freedom, a range of motion within a frame of constraint. So be cautious on doing that. They're putting everybody into a freedom and not being free. The words. Those that are being affected realize that, but there's not much more that can be done, and there's not much support other than maybe some, we see like Julian Assange, the posters, and spend years and years outside the jail supporting him, which is all cool, but look what happened and look what had to happen. And then to what end? They just want a little piece of meat, and they had nothing, but they were able to get that much. The raids did not result in any charges being brought against two U.S. citizens, Symes and Ritter. The U.S. government works over time to stigmatize any journalism processing connectivity with Russia, Ritter said. Symes, who has been living in Moscow since 2022, has a similar impression of what Washington aimed to achieve by raiding his family home in Virginia. Quote, it's clearly an attempt to intimidate not only somebody from Russia, but just anyone who goes against official policies and particularly against the deep state. So last I heard, folks, intimidation is a crime in every state. It's not a lawful purpose either for purposes of warrant, especially where the consequence becomes the felony, these extortion and the conversion that I keep mentioning to you over and over wherever they pop up. Remember, the unwarranted interference with the property or the unwarranted interference with the right appurtenant to that property or other rights. So those are the two, and they're felonies. Those aren't lawful purposes to get a warrant. So I've been wondering, with all these recent proofs of government intimidation, partially proven where no charges are filed, and the consequent rifling through journalists' possessions, infringing on their sources' anonymity, and the other important first interest protected rights and privileges and immunities, have two points of interest on this, looking at this. Is the court handing the search warrants out a mere rubber stamp process where you see no charges occur? And two, might it be advantageous to take this history of the government oppression, repression, and unlawful intent under color of authority, that brings in the unwarranted under color, but without lawful purpose, along with other proofs of journalism that you might be doing? I'm talking really to you journalists or anybody who might want to make themselves look better as a journalist. What I'm saying here is start to prepare to make yourself a valid press journalism. Start making your things more organized. So if they do try to come against you, you're going to be able to produce that you are in journalism. And then you're going to trigger this whole thing by what I'm saying about pointing out this history of rifling through your life and then not having a charge as a pretense. And you bring those proofs with that being done by the petitioner, what you're doing, to the court. And this is something I've talked about before. You go for a declaratory judgment before all this comes down. Given the rabid, unsupported threat of intimidation or dread, which is terrorism, threat, intimidation, and dread by a system of government is the terrorism. That's your common law, if you will, definition, not the U.S. definition. It's caused by government itself. A declaration that there is no violation of law relative to the journalist's activities, your activities as a journalist, contractual or other arrangements that you'd bring in. You go ahead and bring those to the court and you demand a declaratory judgment. And you do this to raise the bar for any subsequent government court, the FBI or other agency, before it can rubber stamp the warrants or stop, detain, or arrest that journalist that does this at the borders, as we're hearing more and more about. And the reason why I'm asking about this, to consider this declaratory judgment, I did this a long time ago, and it became apparent to me to think about this as I noticed that Gov gone bad, in part because of the appurtenant post-founding father Lincolnized occupation of our country, now transitioning into the war of terror by the government. And that the declaratory judgments for one's lawful conduct disapproved of by the government would need to be highlighted, would need to be exposed. Because in the land, this land that's usurped by a military permission is required by the district official, usually a district commander, or a delegee, to do anything. And if you look really close at what this international law thing does under military condition, as I've talked about it before, the military could order that everything look normal, and you better make it look normal. Everybody just functions normal. Nobody even knows that you wouldn't walk in. You couldn't walk into the set, if you will, and know the difference between an organic establishment and one that was run by a military district, a commander. So when you go read this Lieber Code, and you start considering international law, it starts to become really apparent what's supposed to be, what can be going on, and no one would be able to really make heads or tails of it until you watch long enough, and then the cracks in the porcelain start to form. And so going back to the declaratory judgments, they would, once they're issued, they stand as the law relative to one's relationship with the government that all officials are required to acknowledge first, and of which can only be overcome by a substantial evidence to the contrary if they want to challenge that, which may keep the ink from the rubber stamp that they're using, which otherwise allows oppression under the color of that ink, so rubber stamp, in favor of the occupying force. And if I'm wrong about the occupier operating openly without anyone's notice, would a declaratory judgment determining one's relationship with the government and its limits on any number of contentious issues that we hear about, especially against a rabid lawfare-driven FBI in this case, would that be a bad thing anyway? The FBI is cracking down on journalism, but can't crack down on trafficking, exploitation, or forced labor. I found this report is fascinating and stunning at the same time. What, again, this just points out that they're in a war, and they will allow the things that they are allowing, and they will deny to us the things that they want to deny. They're able to do it, but they won't. You just track what they're doing. You just track exactly what's going on and what's happening. It doesn't take much anymore to actually see it if you just keep watching and keep analyzing what's going on. U.S. cannot track all unaccompanied migrant children after release from custody. Now, following this very carefully here, what I'm going to read, the report underscored that without an ability to track unaccompanied migrant children, U.S. immigration agencies have no way to ensure that they are safe from trafficking, exploitation, or forced labor. Quote, this alert informs you of our urgent issue we discovered during an ongoing audit and the actions ICE has taken to address the issues. Specifically, we found ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, cannot always monitor the location and status of unaccompanied migrant children who are released from DHS and HHS custody. U.S. immigration agencies have no way to ensure that they are safe from trafficking, exploitation, or forced labor, unaccompanied migrant children who are released from DHS and HHS custody. Sort of implies HHS is known, that they're a known conduit for trafficking, exploitation, and forced labor. And remember, in the States, as child services or whatever actual department name they put on it in the States, and where I uncovered exploitation by state system protected by the judges, that a couple of senators said, when I had them in the camera in a studio and had them on camera making my documentary, they said that they allowed that federally funded system into the state, but like an immortal Dracula, they couldn't get rid of it, the so-called child services system. Do the ICE and the Departments of Continuity of Government, DHS, announces it is absolving, is what they're doing here. They're absolved now of any further liability once it turns these migrant children over to a department they know is a conduit for trafficking, exploitation, or forced labor. So again, they put a public notice that they don't have it. Now they can absolve themselves of whatever might be happening. And I'm saying those two things show us they know something's happening, if they didn't even know what it was. But they do know. They do know what's really actually going on. We're hearing it. Epstein didn't kill himself for a reason. That stuff. My study was back in 2003 to 2005. And I paid a little bit for that, but I got away. And I may be one of the few that have. Most everybody that does this and gets very close at all are dead. And I explained to you that I found a story, some FBI guy, investigator, came in behind me, and when he was retired, I think, and he got too close and was too well connected, and he's dead. So this is an interesting problem. You know, I saw this story, I said, this is very interesting how they're going to absolve themselves. So my study on this kind of gave me an insight. And that highlights the fact, again, as stated in the story, the U.S. immigration agencies have no way to ensure that they are safe from trafficking exploitation. You know, you can read that over and over again, those two lines. U.S. immigration have no way to ensure trafficking exploitation and forced labor of unaccompanied migrant children. There's also a very hideous thing that they are separated on purpose so that the parents can come in. And they're trafficking in the fact of separating the parents. Because the question, where is the parents here? How'd they get unaccompanied? So given agency trafficking, exploitation, or forced labor is systemic, and that fact is now more universally known as we have seen the news. Though I'm not so sure people truly attach it to the government itself. Look very carefully. We can probably be fairly assured nothing more will be done about this as the conscience of those in these agencies is officially wiped clean, maybe for their sake and help and safety. But do you really think those children are no longer known to some of those agency personnel, given this problem is systemic upon a child's entry and capture by the system? Where are these children now? What's going on with them? Apparently, the Fed can't accurately track jobs either, as apparently, like it can't track children, it will exploit. From the CDC to the Fed economic epidemiology cooking the books to hide the attack in free fall, Fed confronts up to 1 million U.S. jobs vanishing in a revision. The U.S. job growth in this country from March was likely far less robust than initially estimated, which risks fueling concerns that the Federal Reserve is falling further behind the curve to lower interest rates. But forget the interest rates. The economic engine is running out of lubricant. We're grinding to a halt. Remember, the small businesses in this country are what the engine for your economy is. We can read, a large negative revision would indicate that the strength of hiring was already fading before this past April. Markets having recently experienced a growth scare that led to concerns that the Fed is behind the curve. And I ask, what behind the curve? The Fed has been and will cook the books to cover its magic eight ball blunders is what they're doing. This is all known. Economists know this. Go look and listen to about anyone that has any thought about it. Powell and his colleagues have recently said that they're focusing more on the labor side of their dual mandate, and he'll take the benchmark revisions into account in his Friday speech as the Fed's annual symposium. While the payroll revisions due Wednesday have long been anticipated by the Fed, this will frame the atmospherics and will underlined that the picture of the strength in the payrolls is not as vigorous as it had appeared in real time. Evercore ISI analyst Krishna Puha and Marco Tassarej, he said in a note Monday. Revisions long been anticipated. If you listen very carefully, people are paying attention. So everyone knows the books are cooked. And they like being lied to in the monetary and financial casino, ruling your jobs and your lives and your future, essentially, and confining you into where it wants you to go. The factors that led to overstated job gains are still present. Adjusted for business birth and death distortions, payrolls for April and July 2024 are the most likely to be revised to close to zero, well below a pace consistent with a neutral unemployment rate. The only factor then here which remains on this is fraud. It's outright fraud what they're doing, because your economy, as I said, after 2009. And a lot of these jobs, when they lost these jobs, is also, you understand, you're watching a society that has to have people with part-time jobs. And I told you they were driving that because of the way Obamacare and then TrumpScare medical was about. They didn't have to pay you after, you know, in full-time if you're only 29 hours. So I told you they were going to force people into part-time jobs. That's also part of the scam and plan. And that's been known for quite a long time, and you're watching it happen right here, and they know all about it. They talk about this word in this article, atmospherics. That's the Fed is talking about atmospherics. Why are they talking about the ether? It should be dealing with the facts. They don't want you to know the facts. They know what the facts are. They cook the books. And I'm wondering why there isn't someone who, as I see people talking about the economists, can analyze this, why someone doesn't come out and start to show, no, this is the real books. This is what's really going on. I hear talking about it, but someone should get together, some of these folks that really know what they're doing, say, no, this is where the state of the real economy. And they keep doing that, and they start to show themselves to be the oracle of economics. I think they're going to have themselves, well, they'll have a nice little business of being those that are telling the truth, and I think people would turn to them. I hear talking and passing and working together, but they need to come together and organize doing that. Stop asking how they are or that we know, and stop saying that the Fed offers the things for free, and put it out. Put out the truth. Maybe you can sell the truth. Maybe you can't. I don't know. Not many big people come listening behind the words. A handful of you, but not many. Nothing but the truth that I can tell. We rely on the attorneys to keep track, though, of how to file a suit, and they don't. Like all the professional frauds that we now see is going on. They keep track when they want to. They don't when they want to. They make stuff up. Don't allow you to get to the point. I've been talking about this all the time. It's a great disappointment in some regard. We're not going to, as a nation, we're not going to be living in a higher realm, if I can use the word higher, but a better realm at all when you have everybody racing to the bottom. As we see once again, though, listen very carefully how they write this, and this is a very interesting story because of who's behind it, this website and what they do, and why I tell you be careful. And though, again, women, children, and indigenous, you want to, the UN method is to help the women, help the children, help the indigenous, and now you're some kind of exalted being. That's just a cover. That's a stalking horse that I've talked for years and years. The breaking: appeals court dismisses whistleblower lawsuit against Merck over MMR vaccine. And you go, oh, no, let's read through here a little bit. Understand the twist on this, but let me see if I can untie it for you pretty quickly. A federal court of appeals today dismissed a lawsuit against Merck alleging that the company misled the Center for Disease Control and Prevention by omitting, concealing, or misrepresenting information about the potency of its mumps vaccine. Now you got to listen to the details here, because they're going to apply it to something. The court applies this to something. And we'll see the failure of these attorneys right there. You can go find it yourself, and I'll give you a link eventually when we get there. The United States Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit upheld a July 2023 United States District Court decision in the United States ex rel Talling versus Merck and Company, which found that even though Merck may have made false claims to the CDC, those claims didn't play a role in the agency's decision to purchase the vaccines for its Vaccines for Children program. Quote, even if we assume the district court did, that Merck made misrepresentations, i.e. false claims, and I got to highlight this, they call it false claims, but we have to be careful on the false claims in the title of the False Claims Act is not false claims like we read here. Misrepresentation, i.e. false claims, based on our de novo review of these considerations, no reasonable jury could conclude that the representations were material to CDC's purchase decisions, the ruling stated. In other words, the judges said, and this is the discussion by the author of the website, attorneys, at the childrenshealthdefense.org site. In other words, the judges said that even if the evidence shows the government knew about Merck's misrepresentation and data falsification related to its mumps vaccine because the U.S. Food and Drug Administration was aware of the behavior and the CDC continued to purchase the vaccine with that knowledge, the company was not in violation of the False Claims Act. Well, let's look at that. And I'll let you read the rest of this report, because I'm right here. The company was not in violation of the False Claims Act. The court responded to misrepresentation as false claims. Someone's put these two together, and the law is not the phrase. So I'll let you read the rest, but I'm going to move on, show how the attorneys are besides themselves on this, if you read this article, about how wrong this decision was. But why do I say that they're beside themselves and I'm not happy with the fact that they think that this was a bad decision? We look at what the False Claims Act, the court said it is not a False Claims Act claim, is what the court said. False claims were made in misrepresentation, but it was not a False Claim Act claim. The False Claims Act is not about making any old false claim, only certain ones. Then again, as I think about that, it's said that attorneys are practicing, isn't it? Boy. While those of us who don't have the luxury to practice are denied if we were to bring up this stuff. See, when we bring up the black and white, we get denied by the same judiciary. And now it's a big wrong to the attorneys and justice for the attorneys. In fact, in petitioning an action for unlawful disconnection of essential services, I just ran across a bench book. And it showed I had done everything correctly relative to trying to get that done. The judge just didn't provide justice, preferring to tell me to go to an attorney. Those of which I checked, though, didn't know anything about this remedy and relief. Is this same problem that we have here? This report and the case from the Children's Health Defense is a professional embarrassment. And I think it's RFK Jr. affiliated, isn't it? This is, well, the one he stands behind. But let's go to that False Claims Act, and I'll just show you how quickly you can go see it for yourself. And I'm just going to paraphrase some of this. The False Claims Act is for certain things. We'll read that right in the beginning. Consider each, as I'm saying these things, relative to any claims by the company of the bioweapon, any of that they might make, and why a misrepresentation about their bioweapon is not relevant, not relative, not a part of a claim you can make. Well, we can read under A, false claims, under the code 31 U.S.C. 3729. I'll give you a link in the blogcaster. Just get over and put that in and you'll read it. A, liability for certain acts. One, in general, subject to paragraph 2, any person who, A, presents false, fraudulent claim for payment or approval. Is that what the company does when they misrepresent what's in the bioweapon? No. False record material to false or fraudulent claim. No. Conspires to commit. To what? The rest of these, all these other parts. No, they don't do that because we haven't found one yet that they violated relative to the False Claims Act. Any person who is in possession or control of property or money. No. It's the government. You're looking at the government stuff here. The dealing with the government on these issues. Any person who makes or delivery a certifying receipt of a property is not what the misrepresentation about a vaccine, the jab is. Anyone who buys or receives debt, public property from an officer or an employee of the government is not what they've done. And G, any person who violates a material obligation to the obligation to pay is not relevant to a bioweapon made by these manufacturers or whatever they talk. So these attorneys may say this is big money winning in court, as you'll read in the article, or the case should have been sent back to a jury, or that it's a very sad day for justice. The truth is the attorneys here didn't have a False Claims Act claim or one that could go back to a jury. We got a number of attorneys on that page talking too, which is really interesting. It's a very sad day for justice indeed, not to get your case properly before the court though. And I think these attorneys had that in their hands and no one else. So I want us to understand that, yes, I would like to see a win, but you couldn't go that way with this law to do it, that they misrepresented anything. You see the proof of the misrepresentation now, don't you? But it's not actionable underneath the False Claims Act. So this is a very important thing to remember as we're looking through what applies. And I've told you a long time ago, reading through the code, United States Code, it's almost disappointing. You have to look at it. This is a corporation. I'll say it's a corporation because of the statutes of the municipal code that is looking to protect itself for the most part. And I'm going to give you, that's a clue to start looking how you read this. And when you start seeing it that way, you start realizing really quickly, you start seeing the words don't talk to you. They do if you're interacting with that government on very certain things, but not as we might think, more common law, more obligation to the people. That's not really in there. As you see in the Title 42, Municipal Law. 1981, that is the government bestowing upon people certain civil rights, or what they call equal rights under their law, the municipal law. Where in the municipal code, the U.S. code, in the Washington, D.C., everything is federal property, even the people, which are converted into entities. And so, when you start realizing this, you start to realize this is the law, the U.S. code, pretty much, not all over, everywhere, but pretty much is just the government protecting itself. And that's what the code is. That's what it's like, even in the Clean Water Act. It's the government's obligation to hand it out over the authority to do a private, to be a private attorney general by act of law. You have to find those, otherwise you can't be, to be able to prosecute these water crimes. That was otherwise the government's obligation. And so this is for the government's obligations, not yours. So be careful in what we, how we see here, how this might work. But yeah, this is pretty clearly, I was looking at, in fact, I think I put a X Twitter out, what was relevant in this case to that false claims? And I just read them to you in paraphrase. I know it's kind of maybe truncated, maybe even hard to understand. Go read it. Just go read it for yourself. You'll see. None of that. It's all about billing, invoices, information, things in possession of what you've already dealt with the government. And that's what they keep saying. The CDC was not, did not need anything in the False Claims Act to make those decisions that it did do. Relative to that misrepresentation, the false claim about what the bioweapon was about. That is not what the False Claims Act is about to do, and a remedy. Just look at that. I'm actually shocked how simple that was to see and how contorted the story is. That's the other thing. I got that link because I want you to read how contorted the attorneys are trying to promote themselves. They did it absolutely wrong, as I've been showing you and explaining. Everybody everywhere that had any legal backing, background, expertise, not anybody has moved forward with the proper discussion relative to that great Covey swindle, but where the actual liability is. Yeah, we see the theater and the federal government and the Senate and all that, but that's not where the first line of defense was supposed to be. First line of defense is your local law with your local health official faithfully complying with that law and providing everyone, case by case, with due process. Not blanket putting that on everybody. And that's what's going to be your power moving into any of these things coming into the future. And I can tell you, I've been reading some things. I told you they're going to adjust the law. They are. You're going to have to be very much more vigilant on these things. But we're watching the evidence. You go to the attorneys, they do it wrong. Clearly, simply, did it wrong here. And then they cry that there was injustice. Yeah, the injustice is they did it wrong. In fact, the judges did point it out. This is BTWRLM 591. For those of you coming in after the hour, keep moving here. We're talking about a lot of tracking things down this day. We're tracking how well the warp speed attack is going and directed to whom we get some information, which should pique our interest mightily here because of what I've just said about protecting yourself and understanding that it's okay not to trust the government, but they won't just let that be enough. They have to have you say a little bit more. And that's why I say don't worry about saying more than they didn't do their due diligence and their due process. And that is all dictated in those local codes. I keep talking about the local communicable disease code, which we are now finding the most shocking finding of the investigation that I'll give you a link to. And I have to say before I get going, the website's having trouble loading stuff here. So I'll just give you what this is supposed to show you, and because it had trouble, I'll go out and I went out and quickly found some more information that I could supplement this with, and then you can put your stuff, your interest together and try to pull out what you see here. There's enough information coming. But the shocking finding of investigation was 100% of COVID-19 vaccine deaths reported VAERS with the identified lot numbers have been caused by just 5% of the batches produced. But the deeply troubling findings don't end there because we decided to conduct a further analysis of the VAERS data on the COVID-19 vaccines, they say here. And we've discovered that the majority of the deadliest batches were clearly sent to Republican-controlled red states across the U.S. Just carry that one through and understand as we consider that who the players are in all this and where they might be, what they might be after. Other kind of war that might be going on. However, look at this. They're using the VAR. Somebody's analyzing the VARS reporting system, which is not everything. It's only what got reported. So the server is having that trouble. So get the link. If you show that it's a 502, the server's down. I don't know why. I was disappointed, but I tracked it all down and found some others. And some information so you can validate all this. And some of this information came through, I think it was Telegram. That I get it through, not Telegram, somewhere else so I can read some of this stuff. That there are toxic batches of vaccines. As I pointed out earlier, we were pointing out way, way early that there was these different sections. Someone pulled up and found out different places in the country had different results. And we then kind of starting to confirm the experimentation that was going on. Right under the government was at warp speed experimenting with the population. In this 30-minute presentation, you get this link. You have to see it if you have Telegram. Put together the statistics by VARS. This researcher has been able to plot the number and timing of the toxic vaccine batches that have been deployed so far. The timing shows purpose, planning, and coordination between the different vaccine providers. It's shocking. Everything is calculated, timed, and monitored to control the degree and rate of injury and death. And again, I'm going to ask you to validate all this for yourself, but we did find that going into it, didn't we? This is almost not even news. It's just confirmation of what we could see, how it was rolling out. And I found the study that reports on batch-dependent suspected adverse events of the BNT 162B2 mRNA COVID-19 vaccine comparison of results from Denmark and Sweden. And I'll just quote the conclusion. Again, you can read this all to yourself or for yourself. The batch-dependent safety signal observed in Denmark and now confirmed in Sweden suggests that early commercial batches of BNT162B2 may have differed from those used later, and these preliminary and hypothesis-generating results warrant further study. And so, even in the minimum, get this to understand that you could use this as evidence to not trust what you're being told. You can demand a much more stringent testing condition before anything has to go on in your due process side. And I think more and more people that start understanding this will be able to push this forward and keep this type of a harm from happening again. As we could see it happening real time. I think I was on board. I think I was on point on all of it as well, which bothers me even a little bit more. But the proof is coming through that this is in fact what's going on. Now think about the scale of that military warp speed attack as an experiment being executed and being documented. And that's what that so part of that track and trace was. They did that without the digital connection. Just wait what they can do when they get a digital Siberian gulag attached to most everybody, if not everyone. And another link, again, pulling this together because I couldn't get the, it's still 502 as I'm reading it right now, that one website. The important data from Europe, the VARES equivalent of different types of adverse reactions, such as herpes, that can cause autoimmune blistering, which I think appears as being remarketed as the more virulent moneypox that we're hearing about. The actual monkeypox being very difficult to transfer unless mostly through sexual contact, typically of gay men, as we heard way early on, a couple of years ago. So they bring on these scientific, these new clades to fill in the scientism sounding bill here to cause better fear. Now we're going a double type of a narrative working here against us. If we aren't careful, we might be susceptible to it. The article reads, if you have taken the vaccine, and I hope you have not, or anyone that has, here is the website where you can check out how toxic your batch is. And we can read how bad is my batch, howbad.info, and some of the toxicities that are going on, associated deaths, disabilities, and illnesses from vaccines, substances, and pharmaceutical products. Eudra Vigilance is the European equivalent of the VARES and includes adverse reaction reports for all vaccines, substances, and products used in the European Union, includes AstraZeneca data. For the first time, all Eudra Vigilance data is available as a downloaded file of 311 megabytes, containing files covering all pharmaceuticals, substances, products, and vaccines for the period of 2002 to 2024. Each record contains a pathology treated, the pathology, as you'll see it probably listed, the drug name under drug, and ingredients under ingredients, and adverse symptoms under the word symptom, and the severity under the word severity. The severity includes recovery, fatality, disability, and hospitalization status. This data enables symptoms frequency to be calculated for each drug, so you can see if there is an excess frequency compared to other drugs. By ranking drugs for different symptoms, this project will help people identify safer alternatives. So this is a very extensive compiling of information from Europe, and I hope it's useful to some of you that are interested in working this through. It may be the skill that you have to go ahead and pull this thing through to give another layer of information to people, as they're starting to look at what's coming at them as this thing moves along, as we've been told it's going to. And so I want to move from, I found a story weeks ago, and I want to talk about it right now, about this coming. They talk about I call it the money pox. I talked about the money pox years ago, the monkey pox. I really wasn't going to talk too much about it. But because it's interrelating still, as I thought it would, I thought in this regard in an interesting way, beyond lifestyle, what the moneypox can be running cover for starts to become apparent in this study. And listen for the word change. Now, the monkeypox is a supposedly a natural. I'm going to assume it's a natural thing. It looks like it's natural, not novel. But this is a study that talks about a novel international moneypox outbreak. Now, that's quite a jurisdiction to have just an outbreak. Let's not look. I'm not going to worry about that part. Novel international moneypox. That showed me this might be a cover. And when we look at the facts of it all, it's starting to look more and more like it. Few clinicians practicing in the United States have ever seen a case of monkeypox infection. However, a new, unusual, multinational outbreak of monkeypox that is unfolding rapidly makes it important to know what a case might look like. This is critical not only to permitting rapid and proper medical and public health interventions, but also to help to understand the extent and spread of the outbreak. The current outbreak, which includes confirmed or suspected cases in the United States, the United Kingdom, Spain, Portugal, Italy, Belgium, Sweden, France, Kyrgyzstan, Australia, Germany, and the Netherlands, appears to have a pattern of spread that does not mirror past outbreaks outside of Africa, also all of which have been related to importation via flights from Africa or exposure to infected exotic pets. So there's your commingling right there. You can keep track of those that are being imported. The ones that are the special outbreaks that are around are a lot more difficult. They're the also ones that can cause the fear. But remember the report I just read about the special batches. And this is just confirming what we saw early on. Not every place responded the same. This unusual monkeypox, let me keep it on the novel side, the unusualness of this. This unusual, they call it monkeypox. Again, if it's running cover, they can call it anything they want. It's only what? Symptoms. And if the symptoms are very close enough, no one's seen the difference. So how are you going to know? This unusual monkeypox outbreak could prompt all clinicians to be attuned to the possibility that this infectious disease, clinicians who suspect that they may have a patient with monkeypox should contact their state or local health department immediately. And so what are they instructing you to do? Go right back to the culprits that didn't protect you during the Great COVID swindle. Now let's go back to the word novel in the lead of this. We're kind of connecting up unusual here. But novel. Novel is lab made. It would indicate by this it is being caused by a novel agent, not a natural agent, such as the jab. The novel agent was the jab. The symptoms of aggregated herpes and autoimmune blister diseases are what rise to the surface here through that pathway. Keep track of this duality. How would you know the difference between the two similar looking symptoms, if you will? And this is part of what I said, how they can start running cover. Like I said, they can't use the PCR until they start jabbing people, and then they can. And then they'll be able to keep track of that novel ingredient, the one that they're looking for. After this case, they can now already got the societies injected to 80% or so. And then we can see we already found herpes popping out. Now we're getting the secondary response, and it started early on. We didn't hear too much about it. About autoimmune blistering. I think they're slightly different in their look, but they're close enough that you just, since no one in the United States has seen it, you just think it is. It's an outbreak. They don't realize it's coming from the jab, actually. And no one wants to argue that it comes from the jab, that's for sure. So let's go on to the report here. I'll read a little bit more about the basics of the natural monkeypox. And not understand it's centered somewhere in the world. And yes, people from there can move, but those are trackable and traceable, right? The ones that are popping up unusually is the other animal. It's not an animal, right? It's a novel, synthetic, lab-made substance. It was possibly, and looks like it was pre-injected into the system to come out years later. Monkeypox, let's say now the real stuff that we would find is an actual pathogen, is a member of the orthopoxvirus family. The most notable member of this is smallpox. double-stranded DNA virus was first noted in monkeys in the 1950s and has a wide host range, notably including rodents. Human cases first came to attention during the smallpox eradication campaign. There are two distinct clades of the virus, the more virulent Congo Basin clade and the milder West African clade. And these clades are essentially just the evolutionary steps that each clade is a different evolutionary adaptation from the same thing. In other words, it's not different. It's not evolving into some new creature. It's gaining new capacities to do what it needs to do as an organism, given it is an organism, and that's all we're looking at here. They put this scientism name on it to bring validity, and then they bring that into the novel or unusual acting one. And we tend to want to, oh, it's more virulent. In fact, it's just systemic inside the response to a body, the immune system response to a bioweapon. But in recent years, monkeypox outbreaks have been identified in 11 African countries, with the most cases reported in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. The increase of monkeypox outbreaks in the recent years may be related to diminished population immunity to smallpox over time. Smallpox is closely related to monkeypox, and vaccination programs for smallpox ended decades ago. Now, not going into the validity of all this, maybe it's a similar thing as well. They've just given it another name. So here we go with naming. Remember, they changed it to Mpox because they wanted to get rid of the stigma of where what was humans that were actually transmitting this was a lifestyle, the gay lifestyle. That's not much different story than what happened to AIDS, HIV. The lifestyle caused a lot of this what looked to be autoimmune deficiencies. They were just actually lifestyle habits that were bad. And you got sick because you just didn't keep yourself up a lot of times, and you did things to run yourself down. However, not going there. Okay, smallpox and monkeypox, and they're claiming that the smallpox ended, and that's what's causing this. So it's not any worse than that. Maybe smallpox vaccinations will work. Maybe the old ones are better than the new ones. I don't know. I'm not here to argue any of that. The point is, we keep it in Africa. And it's trackable and traceable there. And it has two of these clades, these evolutions that have gone on. And unless someone moves from there, it stays there. It doesn't just break out unusually all over the place. And we now see that the batches were different. Now you can understand it wouldn't be consistent in societies either if it was a novel bioweapon in people. But their autoimmune systems now are dysfunctioning. Or functioning to bring this on. So there's a lot more here to read, a ton more on this. So you can get that link behind the woodshed at the blogcaster at reallibertymedia.com. I'll let you read through it if you're interested. I want to touch base on it only because to me it's more important that if I can in the future see that people aren't run down by these diseases these symptoms that they throw out, and they're overwhelmed and they're feared, and people, you rightfully should be afraid if it's real. You don't want this stuff, but it looks like we're running bioweapons over the top of this. And this one, I told you, that is more close to what I was concerned with. They have a real thing going on, and then they roll the bioweapon over the top of it. This being in Africa, it kind of gives us some distance, if we can keep track of that as well. It seems that there could be more coming that, as I told you, people start bleeding from their eyes and their ears and whatever orifice they have and their skin. People will freak out. When we get to that level, people are going to freak out. It's going to be really hard to keep your sense of stuff. And still, at that level, when they start changing the laws, they can throw you into, just go ahead and presume you a suspect and throw you in. It's going to be a lot more difficult to work, although your habeas should still work to show it was fraudulently imposed upon you, even if it's real, right? So there may be a situation, but you're not the infectious principal. They may suspect you, but they fraudulently suspected you, like the FBI does to make stuff up. We're watching. I point to these FBI stories to show you the method that can be used that's being brought in different subject matter areas in the same manner. We just don't necessarily see it that way. And so, to me, it's just important. It's why I talk about it. I don't know why I'm, with all the diminished amount of response I get, I don't know why I continue. It just somehow there's something in me tells me to continue talking about it. Maybe one moment it'll make sense to people. First of all, if they're faced with it. But secondly, I'm hoping when you're not faced with it, you start to put it together so that you're not surprised either. So we'll just let you read all the rest on this. I'm not saying the monkeypox, like smallpox, is not something. I'm saying they're running what was supposed to be confined and is confined into Africa. They're letting it run around under the collar of this thing that's popping out that looks like it's something else. And that's a crime. It's a crime against people. And they start to get presumptions that they exist, and that gets people in trouble, like it did the COVID swindler. I get lots of people saying that they're admire all of us that didn't take the vaccines and all that, didn't take the PCR test. For me, it was going to the law. That wasn't that hard. I don't think that's to be admired on the one hand. On the other hand, that nobody actually did that, I guess it is to be admired, but not in the way that exalts anybody. It's an evidence of our failure as a people. And we can do it much, much, much better. And it's not really that hard. The obligation is on the government. They flipped that around fast and no one said no. No one actually pressed it. And you heard the cases that did. The people that did, like those Germans in Portugal, they won. No, they were locked down for a while, but they were going to be locked down anyway. But they came out winning. They came out with the fact that another German guy came out and showed how it was all wrongly done as well. But he did that on a habeas corpus. So, proving that what I'm saying is there, and it's coming up again as we watch the states are starting to adopt federal procedures that makes it a lot more difficult, but not impossible, to do the very same things I'm telling you. It doesn't change the fact that they're going to have certain things to do, and when you were only suspected and never proven, and they still had to do the proof, now you have a point of relief that a court should allow you to do. And also, if you're not underneath it, if you look carefully, this monkeypox is more like the flu in that you have this time that you're infectious. And you're only infectious once you start showing the pox. It's unlike the COVID swindle they scared everybody with. You can be, like they have in the new laws coming down in Washington, pre-communicable. Let me just say something here. Maybe I'm leading with that. It's not communicable disease if they can determine it pre-communicable, because the requirements are to show that it's communicable. There's no jurisdiction, but anyway, let me get back to this. With all that harm, and now you see the European bears with all that information, don't think the government will run to help compensate your harm, relative at least to the great COVID swindle either, since they were the agents that duped everyone, as we can read. UK rejects payment to COVID-19 jab victims for not being disabled enough. Thousands of seeking. Can I read that again? It's so funny, isn't it? UK rejects payments to COVID-19 jab victims for not being disabled enough. Thousands are seeking compensation for harm allegedly caused by coronavirus vaccines, according to the paper. Almost 14,000 people in Britain have applied for payments from the government for disabilities they claim were caused by COVID-19 vaccines, the Telegraph reported. Only 175 people, or less than 2% of those seeking compensation, have so far received the one-off money transfer of $155,300, the paper said in an article on Saturday. Data obtained by the Telegraph through Freedom of Information request indicates that those who were eventually reimbursed suffered from conditions such as stroke, heart attack, dangerous blood clots, inflammation of the spinal cord, excessive swelling of the vaccinated limbs, and facial paralysis. Everything we've heard before, I want to throw that out there. When they say safe and effective, you bring this story out and you say, no, they're not. And I don't trust you. And now I want more stringent tests before you approach me on those answers. Because underneath communicable disease law, vaccines aren't the only thing to stop the transmission. So understand that. Use all kinds of things. And remember what they did to ivermectin, whether to work now or no, I'm not saying, I don't know, or hydroxychloroquine, I'm not saying, they could be there. The point is that you know now they're available, and you can press that if you get hit with some kind of a order to be put away somehow, whatever the new words are to make it more look more lawful. It's still fraud. These things are evidencing that the government knows that they caused the harm, and they're going to compensate somehow if you can get through the gauntlet of oppression and obstruction to them. But thousands of people have been refused payment due to the government's medical assessors arguing that there is no concrete proof that their health problems are a result of the vaccines, the report read. Use that. So you're going to come out and say safe and effective, then I have to prove it. I'm not taking that stuff. You're not going to put me through that. You've already done it once. I'm not going to even go the third time. Second time is enough. I'm not doing it. Find me something that's better than that. Hundreds of others were turned down due to being not disabled enough, it added, under the rules of the Vaccine Damage Payment Scheme, VDPS, an applicant that has to be at least 60% disabled to qualify. Now, put that into the communication if you're going to go against them. They want you to be safe and effective, including being 60% irreparably injured. Now, I'm not sure anybody anywhere disclosed that minor, nanoscopic, infinitesimal, almost non-existent detail to anyone. It does, however, admit those are the irreparable harms caused by the bioweapons and not the unsupported claims of vaccine heretics or some guy behind the woodshed, that there is no vax, notwithstanding. They were bioweapons. This admits to that. You need to put this stuff together now while it's here and still on the internet to show this is what the government allowed. They actually did compensations and then they fought you over whether or not you could prove it. You just don't want to walk into that one. You don't even want to try. And if you're going to attempt it, you're going to have them in your defense and in your demands say, you're going to show me what it's going to take. Before I take that, you're going to show me how I do baseline so we can find out if there's something different. Now, that's going to wipe out, the whole process is wiped out right there because your disease, if it's real, only lasts for a couple weeks and then it should be done, right? Like all other sicknesses. So, you understand what I'm saying? You start getting yourself out, but they can't put it on you anyway. Now, I was sent a link to remind us on what I was saying, the alternatives. Now, the remedy in the case gets more oppressive, and in case you want to not be a victim of the government safe and effective, but I need to caution us on the proper application in these articles as we're going to read them and watch how the discussion goes. I don't want to criticize the discussion too much. It's on point for where it's at, but we don't want to bring it up and then pigeonhole ourselves into a subject matter that they may have been talking into a small realm here where I read the article on habeas corpus, probable cause, warrants, detention, and extrajudicial state killing under declared public health emergencies. Very important reading to do that needs to be done. But I want to point out something as we go here. I'll just read this little bit and then I'll go into a little bit of the analysis for us. Below are excerpts of the email exchanges about HHS CDC's demonstrated use of quarantine authorities under 42 USC 264, 42 CFR, that's the federal rules, 70, and 42 CFR 71 to arrest and detain 3,000 cruise ship passengers at U.S. military bases in March 2020, killing at least 10 people while they were held in detention. So I want to just highlight right here, just understand this is a commerce authority of the United States at a U.S. base. This is not going to be the bulk of everybody when they're referring to these federal laws and rules. And it's not that in some cases you might find yourself there that they might be used, but in most cases across the country we read this, don't then get sucked into what they're saying relative to that and think that what they're saying is the only remedy. So I'm not going to read more. Get the link and read it through. It's very important information. I don't want to diminish that part. But people need to, because you have to familiarize yourself with this anyway, and this is a nice way to do it. But I want to ask, what do federal, municipal, or other U.S. codes have to do with state reserve power over health matters? As I shift this from their referencing and relative to those cruise ships, which was properly applied, to the rest of us, they say the right remedy, but the way they go through it may not be applicable. So those of us that read this Understand, they're talking about cruise ships and military bases. I say turn back to where the organic establishment of the government is. The health powers are reserved to the states. You got to turn back there. So that's what I want to make sure you get right. Notice that the subject matter here, you read it in the cruise ships. Okay, so keep track of this. And the state matter would be to turn not to the federal habeas corpus that they mentioned, but to the state habeas corpus procedures that I was talking to everyone to try and go read and find them. Apparently, it's a little bit more difficult than I was thinking. It is written. It's right there to do. A lot of people had to question, where's the form? And I said, it's the law. You read the law. It tells you how to build your paper. That's a question. So I'm asking people, in face of what they're coming down with, we could actually have pre-communicable quarantines if you'll let them. I don't even know how they got there, but that's what they're pressing. I told you they would do it. We're going to have a better understanding of what we need to do right at the moment, because these are the types of things that just grab you and, under the determination of a health official, just whisk you away. So this is not something you're going to prepare for necessarily. You can put your mind ready for it, but you're going to have this stuff in your mind on how this works and have, I said before, people around you that understand so they can help each other. Maybe a bunch of you may be picked up. I don't know. But this is what it looks like they're pressing for. So by way of the example of an article that I was reading of the adoption by Washington State, the state of Washington would be adopting this, or any state that adopts federal things here, is going to be much more concerning. But this is what they're moving the CDC that had no authority, all their nonsense, into the states, which becomes now federal nonsense in the states. That's not even unknown. Federal nonsense in the states, when they take federal funds, they're doing that. Most of your actual, you think it's state law, is actually federal law. And federal money requires federal law impositions. So it's not free that way either. But getting back to this, the states are adopting in the federal tyranny, essentially. And they're making it look like they have absolute power. But I'm not sure these things are as ironclad as they are saying in the article. For instance, when they mentioned sole discretion, that still needs a lawful initiating purpose more than conjecture. But you'll see it's kind of riding along with this. And the state habeas corpus is available to test that and all the any other derelictions the official does, or the code now imposed they are told to do wrongly relative to due process, that you have a right to challenge at every point. Again, the habeas is the door that allows that. So this sort of, as I'm thinking through this, what I've just been confronted with, and I haven't really been able to spend too much time with it, but just thinking really quickly through it, this sort of state adoption, again, requires much more stringent objection. But the state would still have to demonstrate more than the fraud as a reason, as I pointed out earlier in the broadcast. They have to really come with it better when you challenge it. Otherwise, it is presumed they're doing it okay. That's what you heard happen a lot. And as we'll see in this article, you read down through this article, something pre-communicable, as I was saying, is not known to be communicable by the very word. Before it might be communicable is an absurd interpretation here by them using that word. So something pre-communicable, not known to be communicable, before it might be communicable, is an absolute absurdity that they're attempting to put on us. The pre-communicability, by definition, is not communicable relative to treatment of that communicable disease. What the official's purpose is to assure through the due process that I've been talking to you about. And all that should be challenged in the denial of that through the habeas corpus petition. So you see the concurrence of the habeas, and you see that they show you the federal side, so don't interrupt. Go look at the federal. It's right there. You go read it. You go find out what a habeas takes. If you substantially followed the habeas in a federal, you could likely pretty much fulfill most of what happens in the state. Once you had the federal, or you get their forms, you can actually download it. You can compare it to the state and change it to the state, what the requirements for the state in order of what the state says. And you'll get a familiarization, and you'll be able to order it, and it's already printed out for you. You just do your adjustments in a document, and now you have one for your state by following their procedures. That's the form, is the procedures of what you have to state, what has to be in them. And so, again, confirming what I said before, early on, before anybody was talking about it, going to the habeas relative to communicable disease law, what they're changing things to, very serious. This article is very important at Bailiwick News. Need to read it. But I want us to be careful not to think these are the silver bullets. They give us a fabulous direction, a path to start following, but be cognizant that they're not necessarily for every situation. And certainly this one is federal, it wouldn't be. Again, the federal was imposing itself, had no right to do that. We heard that in a couple lawsuits. They said the CDC had only the right to advise, had no power to do anything else. It had no power, actually. So, again, this is the way this is coming down, and I talk about this in the context of communicable disease law because it's so clear. That section is pretty small and easily dealt with. Other things and other subject matters where the habeas may be coming into play for us is as much an importance to understand this so that we can apply it to those things. So don't underestimate that. I'm talking about one particularly, to my mind, it's a lot clearer to attach to this than other subject matters. But it's all applicable when you're an unwarranted restraint of your liberty. The habeas comes forward. So I won't go through all that. I've talked to you about it. You might be able to find it in the blogcasters in the past. But moving back a bit, what we saw, monkeypox and the gay lifestyle and speaking there of the sexual confusion causing trouble, we now can read a consensus no longer. The American Society of Plastic Surgeons becomes the first major medical association to challenge the consensus of medical groups over gender-affirming care for minors. So remember what consensus is. It's not science. It's just a bunch of opinions of a bunch of agendized people that are not—they're actually not following any science, but just come to this idea of what it's going to take to advance the agenda. And so understand right there, you see the consensus is, to me, always a problem. It's what advisory councils come to, a consensus. It's not really what's right or what's wrong. It's just what we got you to believe. It's the method by which they bring you. And they say that's supposed to be what's truth in science, a consensus, but it's not. You have consensus. Wherever you find a sustainable development goal, you'll find consensus. And then they cook the books on how many are actually doing that. For us, the consensus for gender-affirming care for minors is being torn here. And the main justification for gender-affirming care for minors in the United States has been that all major U.S. medical associations support it. So see how they did that. No science, just we said it was okay. It's safe and effective. And I'm asking us to be much more intelligent, critically thinking, and test those. Right down to the nubbins of where it needs to be tested, even before it sprouts. Critics of this supposed consensus have argued that it is not grounded in high-quality research or decades of honest and robust deliberation among clinicians with the different viewpoints and experience. Instead, it is the result of small number of ideologically driven doctor association members and LGBT-focused committees who exploit their colleagues' trust. What have I talked about over and over? Maintaining your confidence and your trust, most importantly. If they have that in you, or they derive it from you, they have you. Whatever that is, it can be a complete evil, and if they get that from you, you agree, they get to run with it. It's what this whole administrative law thing works on when you see getting consensus at these meetings and things like that. And so just here's right in front what this one medical association has broken that. Physicians presenting different viewpoints are silenced and are kept away from decision-making circles, ensuring the appearance of unanimity. And that's exactly what happens in these meetings that you go through, the agency meetings, when they want to get an agenda through. Everyone thinks it's the Hegelian process and dialectic and all that. Yeah, it's parts of that, but it's much, much more. But that's, so it's divide and conquer, essentially. They put you in the little groups and all that. Some people, if you've done it, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You recognize that statement. And then your viewpoint is silenced. Once they get you, the group of you at a small table, they can figure you out because you give all this information before you get in there. And then your stuff just gets put to the back of the list and it doesn't get talked about no more. They reference it when they do their report, but they then get the rest of the consensus, which is the majority. That's direct democracy as well, in a different word. But the U.S. consensus now appears to have its first big fracture. In July, the American Society of Plastic Surgeons, a major medical association representing 11,000 members and over 90% of the field in the United States and Canada, told me that it has not endorsed any organization's practice recommendations for the treatment of adolescents with gender dysphoria, The ASPS acknowledged that there is considerable uncertainty as to the long-term efficacy for the use of chest and genital surgical interventions, and that the existing evidence base is viewed as low quality, low certainty. Calling the evidence for youth gender transition low quality is not, as some gender clinicians say, a scary buzzword intended to confuse non-experts. In evidence-based medicine, low-quality evidence means something very specific, that the true effect of an intervention is likely to be markedly different from the results reported in studies. As one expert in evidence-based medicine put it, low-quality doesn't just mean something esoteric about a study design. It means there's uncertainty about whether the long-term benefits outweigh the harms. Interject. Remember the risk-based world. That's what they're talking about. This is why you would even look at a vaccine. The risks of getting it and it's what it's going to give you are going to be better than what you get if you don't get it. Well, everything is based in this risk-based. Even wildfires are managed this way. It's wrong, but that's what they do. Okay, but this is where the insurance companies and the liability comes in to be undermined as well, as evidence. For those harms, which include infertility, sexual dysfunction, and the agony of regret, continues to mount and ethical concerns create harder to ignore, European countries are increasingly prioritizing psychotherapy and reclassifying endocrine and surgical approaches as experimental. And I'll add to the risk as here, the oops, detransitioning. That's what's starting to happen. That ties into the psychotherapy that happens and the confusion that's put on, and the society puts that into these young folks. They're not capable of making this decision and they're pressed to it. They're actually encouraged. But I'll let you get the link behind the Woodshed Blogcaster to read this very long discussion. A lot of stuff, very interesting to see it and familiarize yourself with it. The U.S. professions are coming to terms with the insanity through factual, scientific, medical, and psychological, as well as, importantly, the legal consequential realities of gender reassignment, so-called. All it takes is saying no to this, the insanity, whether as individual or associations, whether men or women, or as legal associations or corporations. As this article astutely concludes, you can read, you can't outsource your professional judgment to other clinicians. It's your responsibility as the last in the chain of treatment to ensure you are doing what is best for the patient now and in the long term. And I say more so, you can't outsource your private judgment to anyone and to another, because it's your responsibility as the last chain before treatment to ensure you are doing what is best for yourself, those you love, and to the good of the greater society when you get into communicable disease law. And I don't think anybody of fair mind would ever want to give anything they have to anybody else. Anyway, so that's the other thing riding on this. You are the last line, and I'm saying not after treatment, you are your own patient. You have to decide that before you decide a treatment. A purported vaccine is just a choice. And we're watching, they're not safe and effective. Well, they're safe and effective if you're going to agree to 60% irreparable harm. See, they didn't tell anybody that, did they? No, not at all. As I was saying last episode about giving Delta Airlines the Bud Light treatment for disrespecting ladies and gentlemen, more evidence hitting them in the pocketbook works against the wokes. Harley Davidson hits brakes on diversity. The iconic U.S. bike maker has dropped its policies after pressure from critics who previously accused it of going totally woke. American motorcycle maker Harley Davidson has ended its diversity, equity, and inclusion initiative, becoming the latest major U.S. company to distance itself from woke policies. The iconic motorbike brand, now for its robustly masculine image, says it would instead focus on retaining our loyal riding community. Harley Davidson was targeted last month by the conservative influencer Robbie Starbuck, who has a pledge to expose the companies for their woke policies and to bring sanity back to corporate America. In a statement in X Twitter, on Monday, Harley Davidson said it would review all sponsorships and outside organizations with which it affiliates. In its statement, the Milwaukee-based firm also said that it had not operated a DIA function since April 2024 and that it does not have some hiring quotas or supplier diversity spending goals. The early American rural retailer Tractor Supply and farm equipment maker John Deere also backtracked on their corporate diversity policy following pressure campaigns led by the activists. Critics of DEI have questioned the efficacy of initiatives aimed at making organizations more diverse and inclusive, leading to pressure on companies to scale back certain programs. So I've mentioned Harley-Davidson enough in this segment. Maybe I can get a generous donation behind the woodshed for that promo, you think? Let's see how that works. Any publicity is good publicity, especially when it's free. Now it gets to look like the hero to its loyal faithful after being insanely stupid. That's STOOPID for the hearing sensitive. And they can now sell a few more bikes with that. The point? Don't let insane get away with directing your life or wag your life. Don't let the tail wag the dog here. You're watching as reality hits. Companies, the associations, the medical professions, they're having to distance themselves and take another look. We need to do that before we get into this. Don't go along with it. You got to nip it in the bud before it starts to get any traction at all. Moving out from here, it's going to be imperative to guard what you value jealously because the insane have arrived to take that from you, and they expect you to like it in a world where silence is consent. And of those promoting confusion and finding out it won't fly down the road or anything else, after what I said last episode, this next article came out which better explains the path to destruction and how it is accomplished administration after administration. You'll notice identifying how the same old plan is rebranded, clothed in different terms, to be the new plan. And understand, if it was merely Marxism, which seeks to end class struggle by envisioning the establishment of a class of society, it would not and could not create class warfare, not use it to further a Marxist agenda. As I said last episode, it is a mistake to say Kamala or her Obamanian ilk are Marxist. The end game is beyond that. But listen very carefully to how it is being pulled off. Even if Trump were the political messiah, and a mess it surely is, as we read Kamala Harris's economic proposals aimed at stoking U.S. class warfare. Again, this is not about a political issue. This is about looking at what's going on. None of this is going to be any good. I'm not saying this is Trump. It's a mess. So this is what they're handing us, and this is what people will accept. And it's time that we stop that. The so-called opportunity economy, Democrat presidential candidate Kamala Harris claims she will build if she becomes the president, does not really differ much from Bidenomics, says financial and geopolitical analyst Tom Luongo. Democrats are looking to rebrand the same agenda they had during both Obama's two terms and the Biden's one term, Luongo explains to Sputnik. It's all an extension of the original plan, which is to nationalize all the important sectors of the economy, housing, healthcare, energy, transportation, that the federal government didn't already control, e.g. communication and defense. And remember, I've been talking about those modernization acts that happened around 2010 or 2013, whatever in there. I told you that was what this is. Here it is. An economist is now identifying. It's on the table working now. According to him, this strategy essentially amounts to breaking the private economy, which involves the displacement of millions of workers and the disruption of supply chains, only to create new opportunities for those most harmed by these policies, the lowest strata of wage earners, young people, by giving them handouts. This is a classic divide and rule politics engaged in by the oligarch class to set the lower class, in the terminology of the proletariat, against the middle class, the bourgeoisie, Luongo notes. Nothing new here. Typically, break your legs and hand you a crutch politics. Luongo argues that Harris and her handlers are perfectly aware of the fact that the law against price gouging will inevitably cause shortages because all price floor and price ceilings lead to shortages, never surpluses. In fact, they are counting on creating shortages. It's part of the strategy in the end to destroy the country they lead. This is not stupidity or incompetence. It is policy, he said. Let me add, and this is austerity, as they've been saying, as I've been arguing that it's in the books. He's just showing us that there's the political angle for it. He also warns the Harris target audience is young voters who are entering a broken workforce and economic landscape today and seeing nothing but a lack of real opportunity. They are hoping in a new round of Obama youth to marshal into an effective fighting force for hope and change along the flames, what they are doing is purposefully increasing the possibility of full-blown civil war. So, Generation X and beyond, gird thy loins. Get you behind the woodshed now. Get properly informed, then take these miscreants to task. They're attacking you. They're attacking all of us, but they're attacking the young, as they've been indoctrinated to be victimized to. And I'm happy to see lots of people, lots of the Generation X are starting to see them. But it's going to require that you reframe everything you've been told into what the reality is. As you've heard the last few stories, the reports, there's a reality, there's actual science out there, there's actual things going on that you have to identify through this noise. And the debt system is one of the pillars supporting the edifice of their covert usurpacious power that you're going to have to understand. And I've been explaining some of this clearly over the years, and I can't put it all in one place, again, in these episodes, that the criminals will create a plausible counters that people will believe are true to defeat the people themselves. I've said this over and over again. It's one of the keys. We've got to communicate without communicating what we're going to do so the enemy doesn't know what we're doing. And yet we have to work mutually together along those same lines. So don't fall for all these terminological transformations to tyranny as we listen to what's coming down. And it's administration after administration. I hope something I said piques your interest, gets you interested, gets you to the information maybe that you can seek out, know that the information's there to use. This has been BTW RLM 591. And I'll be with you next week. Tech tips or nature willing.
Echoes call, the hour is near. Behind the woodshed, the truth you'll hear. Every Sunday, the clock strikes three. Hal's voice rolls like thunder, fierce and free. Pull up a chair, lean in close, lessons to learn. Dose by dose, behind the woodshed, no stone unturned. Hal's words ignite, the airwaves burn. Stand up, listen, it's time to learn. Behind the woodshed, where truths are earned. Law to liberty, the spectrum line in Hal's court, no place to hide. A can of wood bass ready to burst for unspoken truths and unquenchable thirst. Behind the woodshed, no stone unturned. House words ignite, the airways burn. Stand up, listen, it's time to learn. Behind the woodshed, where truths are earned. So mark the time when Sunday comes. Behind the woodshed, beating drums, and fierce and bold in the fight for truth. Next week, heed the call. Behind the woodshed, standing tall.